Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to discover all of our previous episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at @Irish_TechNews and on Facebook at facebook.com/IrishTechNews. Thanks and enjoy the listening.
Hi. So today on the Irish Tech News podcast, we have someone who's based in London, but has been involved in quite a few interesting projects and would definitely be at the cutting edge of blockchain and AI, and whose book we actually reviewed last year, too. So who do I have the pleasure of talking to today?
Dinesh Guarda. Thank you so much, Simon, for having me. Looking forward. So, Dinesh Guarda, based in London, but a citizen of the world, and was born in Portugal and a bit French as well from my family.
Very good. Cool. So for those that didn't read your book or don't have a sense of what you do, how would you explain maybe what your background is and what you're working on now?
Yeah, so I do a lot of stuff, but I have three heads. So one is as a writer and author and thought leader that writes a lot about the future of technology, the future of AI, and as well blockchain, which are my areas, and now more and more in terms of smart cities as well. And I've been as well teaching universities like Copenhagen Business School, Group in SIC London, that is part of the French group, that as well as the University of Monaco. Then I have a second head as a serial entrepreneur and founder of the group Studium. That as the company under the Studium Group, we have Tech ABC and as well Open Business Council. And these are the biggest platforms of the group is openbusinesscouncil.org. That is a wiki and technology platform for business and for individuals, where we have a wiki kind of crunch-based marketplace that has been growing quite fast and is organizing as well the Open Business Council Summit and Awards. Then we have as well citiesabc.com, that is a platform for cities and for creating a bit like a Bloomberg terminal for cities and data and creating decentralized data on blockchain for cities. And last but not least, open fashionabc.org, which is a platform targeting as well a platform to organize and digitize the fashion and textile industry. So that's my second hat. And then my fourth hat is I've been as well involving in advising countries like Malaysia, where I created the concept of Malaysia 5.0 with the government of Malaysia. And I've been as well involved with other countries on this area. About my book. So my book is the last one. I've been writing books since I'm 12. So I have a lot of books. And the last one is 4IR, so Fourth Industrial Revolution, AI, Blockchain, FinTech, IoT, Reinventing a Nation. And this book was a book that I wrote and then redesigned actually in partnership with Dr. Reza Sin, that is the director of the government of Malaysia. And I come up with the book and the strategy because I understood that there was a lot of challenges in terms of how to look at digital transformation and how to use digital transformation to lead countries. And of course, this was before COVID-19. And it was actually launched in November 2019. And after that, of course, the book became even more important because a lot of things happening right now with the challenge of digital transformation with countries are more important than ever right now with this. So that's what we've been doing. It's going pretty well. And the book is available on the 4ir.book.com and as well as on Amazon and all the places. So
yeah. Oh, look, I mean, yeah, and we reviewed it, and I think it was useful, and it helped to map out. This is one of the things that I wanted to ask you, and I've been wondering is since writing the book and with the year that we've just had and with your passion for smart cities, how has the last year impacted on the kind of places where smart cities are hoping to go? Has it speeded things up or slowed things down or neither?
I think it has speed massive. I think the challenge right now is that I think everyone understands that even countries that didn't have any strategy for digital right now are pushing digital strategies. So this is having a massive impact in anything related with smart cities, countries, anything. It's really quite amazing and disruptive in a lot of ways. But I think right now, any country, any city right now is desperate and pushing towards digital strategy. So the book actually became actually a blueprint for Malaysia. At the moment, actually, is being used in a lot of areas of the Malaysia government for strategies and stuff like that. And we've been actually helping. I'm involved as well, although not directly involved, but I've been quite involved in a lot of things. But I think at the moment I'm working with World Smart Cities Forum, and mm-hmm. we are advising governments like Vietnam, Ukraine, and even London and New York in terms of digital strategy for their cities. And we work as well with EVShare, that is a smart cities platform that is working with the government of Minas Gerais, that is the biggest state or second biggest state in Brazil, and as well collaborating with Los Angeles smart mobility system and ecosystem and San Francisco. So I think every, from Vietnam to Malaysia to New York, London, every country right now in the world is looking at this. And I'm as well starting to collaborate on some things because I'm very European, although I'm in London a bit depressed with the Brexit, but I'm moving forward. I think there's a massive opportunity here for I think we are still in early stage because the I think what COVID, in one end, COVID aligned and made people understand how important people need to take serious these areas of digital transformation, but it shows as well our lack of preparation most of the governments have. And I think this is the biggest challenge we have right now, is that the countries that don't take this serious. And I think I can quote a book that I love, that is from Professor Yuval Noah Harari, The 21 Lessons for the 20th Century, is that at the moment we have to get this. And my next book is actually precisely about Society 5.0, that is how to create a balance between all the digital challenges that we have, but as well to create an alignment that creates value for everyone.
Yeah.
So is this the small ideas, but I will get to you.
Yeah, and I think that is a theme that we have discussed with a few people, that going forwards, if we're going to have a positive future and sustainable and connected, it has to be also equitable, and it has to ensure that it's not just for a few people. With the Open Business Council Summit coming up in April, What is the thinking behind that, and what kind of ideas are going to be discussed and explored at the summit?
Yeah, so the summit was created precisely because I was creating the platform Open Business Council, that mostly in a nutshell is a wiki for business, but with a marketplace. And I created mostly because I found out that, so there's 430 million SMEs and micro business in the world. And the challenge that we have is, and this is not my data, it's data from United Nations and a lot of other things, is that from the 440 million SMEs and micro businesses, most of them don't even have a digital presence at all. And this is quite important to say less, but is as well more important and relevant as we get into this COVID-19, because what is happening right now is, if you look, and this is actually, yesterday I was reading an interesting article on The Guardian. They were talking precisely about, at the moment, there's around 10 quarters of the wealth economy. So if you put, so the world economy is around $80 trillion. And if you just take out of the $80 trillion, Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, and all these big giants, we have probably 20 to 40% or even 40% of the world economy. But the challenge is that not only we have a big chunk of the world economy, but these companies and corporations have all the data of humanity, have more money than most of the countries together, because at the moment all the countries have debt, they don't have, unfortunately, the rest. So we have a big challenge right now. So I think the point right now is how we're going to be dealing with it. So we created the summit precisely, first of all, to create awareness for this. And the idea is that the summit has a huge amount of contributions between governments, individuals, and people like you that I deeply respect. And what we're trying to do is mostly create an ecosystem that creates, and you are as well a blockchain person in the sense of trying to create a strategy that at the same time creates value for everyone, because we cannot put most of the world economy out of the economy. And this is the biggest challenge, is that effectively a huge part of these people are out of the game. And this is, initially this started because I was invited actually by three countries telling me, okay, could you create an event to promote and create awareness for these things? And I thought, okay, instead of creating an event, why don't we create actually an event for everyone that can actually create value for everyone? And after that, I decided to do the event, and we decided to make it bigger. And now we created as well the awards, and the awards as well were created a bit like a next prize. And the idea here is mostly share intelligence, share ideas, share knowledge, but as well share education and share that. So we have a huge amount of university involved, from the University of Edinburgh to to the University of Durham, to the University of Surrey, University of Lisbon. We have as well some universities over there in Ireland where you're based, Simon. And we're trying to get global organizations that are fostering innovation and inclusion on these areas. And that's the idea of the Open Business Council. The idea is how to create smarter businesses, digital transformation businesses, and opening the resources that are coming from social media and digital, that anyone can use them. And I think when it comes to AI, of course, it's more radical, the opportunities, but I think we need to find ways of leveraging this. Okay, so that's the idea that we're trying to do here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess one aspect that I've been wondering about is that smart cities offer massive potential to do some really good things and very efficient use of resources and things like that. At the same time, smart cities provide the potential for governments to know absolutely everything and anything about their citizens, which obviously sometimes has been used in less than positive ways. So how do we move forwards with smart cities so that they don't just become a tool for control of their populations in a non-benign way?
That's a very good question, Simon. And I think the most important thing on this is definitely that the only way to do that is create awareness and education. So I think the technology, and you are a big ambassador of blockchain, so the Open Business platform, we are working to get from every business certified with blockchain, but making sure that this data is not owned by the platform. So at the moment, we are negotiating to bring 130,000 businesses to the platform, and you want to bring other businesses. And the idea is to every business in the planet be able to list their company in the platform. But then the data will be partly used in a neutral way that the business will own their own data, and we'll be having referrals and rewards on this data as they get their digital presence. So this is the good thing about blockchain and DeFi. And I believe on this, honestly, I've been actually one of the first people writing about this. And with people like you, Simon, we've been actually pushing this. And I believe it's not just for the speculation. I believe we can use this to create very good value. So I think the smart cities are definitely the epicenter of all the innovation in the humanity. And I think any city right now is already a smart city in one way or the other. The point is that most of the cities have a fragmented kind of chaos of data. If you look at Google, they digitized most of the hospitals in the UK. And they got all the data of the hospitals because they did it for free, but they took an initiative as well of doing the work. So as well, they spend a lot of money on this. But the irony is that the UK government should have negotiated in the sense that this data is not yours. You have this data, but this data should be public and should be used for the good. So I think it's a lot of work by people like us, all of us listening to us, that have an opportunity and should actually take initiative. So I always look at an example. If you look at Edward Snowden, whatever your political views are, Edward Snowden alone took down the biggest and make sure that he opened a lot of things that were actually going not the best or a direction, independent of the way you see it. So I think everyone has a power, instead of using social media to just complain or just actually worst sometimes just bullying people or creating some kind of twilight zone of conspiracy theories, I think you can use it for education and to use this data to empower you. And I believe that blockchain is the foundational technology that creates the second layer of the internet of trust that Don Stepscott, that Scott have been working. And that's the idea of my book, is the 4ER, in the sense of creating a fourth industrial revolution that is not about the revolution, but about the continuation of evolution of technology that can empower us and doing this. And I think the smart cities, purely in terms of creating a smart infrastructure of the data of the cities, but as well as smart optimization of the cities. And I think this concept of optimization is very important, because if you get the data about the people suffering, the data about the people with challenges, or as well the people creating. And if you have a sense of society, I think you can actually do a lot with these technologies. But I agree with you, it's not easy. And at the moment, we have a very dystopian view of technology that is taking us in a lot of crazy directions. So I'm actually working to make sure that we take this to the next level. And my goal with the Open Business Council, as my activist and as a father, is that I want to make a world that is more utopian. And I think if you go to the narratives of fiction, I think you can look at three narratives in terms of fiction. We can look at the narrative of the Terminator of Schwarzenegger, that we get technology that will destroy us, or you can get the space Star Trek that is more a technology that enables man and humanity to go and expand around the universe. And I believe on Star Trek, actually, I became a huge fan of Star Trek, which I only love, but as I understood technology, I started respecting more Star Trek, because it's about the narrative we build the technology. And I think with people like Ben Gortzel, that creates, for instance, Sophia the robot, and even right now working with Aidan Meller, that has created the IDA, the robot as well, I believe that you can actually create androids and robots that actually can empower humans and not just disrupt and destroy humanity. But as well, these parts as well, for instance, I did a video recently about reflecting about these things, especially the video was called, and is in my YouTube channel, and the video was my reflection in terms of imagination, human dark side, and AI. And my conclusion with that video and research was that definitely there's a massive work that we need to do to make sure that we not only prepare ourselves for this, but as well that we are conscious about the challenge that's coming out of this. And I think I just use a quote that I think is interesting for you, that is from Carl Sagan. Relativity does set limits on what humans can ultimately do, but the universe is not required to be in perfect harmony with human aspirations. So the universe told us, I think, with COVID-19, that we are much more fragile than we think, and the nature can just destroy us in a clip. But at the same time, we have a chance that as we adapt and evolve as nature, we can cope with that. And I think that's my goal with what I'm doing with this, going a bit more philosophical. But I believe that smart cities, coming to your question, are the epicenter of where we can actually work this. But especially as society, as individuals, we have to work hard to make sure that this gets under control.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I guess with all these things, there's the positive side and the challenging side. In this context, what low-hanging fruit might we see coming in the rest of 2021 and in the short to medium term in terms of wins and successes in terms of smart cities? Like, I guess, what are you excited about and what trends do you see coming soonest?
Well, my work with especially the work I've been doing with the World Smart Cities Forum helped me understanding the challenge and the opportunities. There's fantastic things happening. For instance, Ukraine, which is a country that unfortunately has been in the news for not necessarily the positive reasons, is doing a fantastic work in terms of highlighting a lot of solutions and trying to put the country using technology to empower the cities and empower citizens. I believe really hard that this is a great opportunity right now. And I think that, so I'm very excited to use this technology to, first of all, build a more innovative ways of making the cities more powerful, more organized. And what I feel right now is that, for instance, a company that I'm working, Zenith Cities, it's technology that is mostly digital technology to empower and look at the challenge of cities. I think with this kind of technology, we can actually get a massive leapfrog in terms of innovation. And as well, we can actually improve our cities' performance, the issues with cities, and create new solutions. Of course, the challenge here is that this comes with a sense of responsibility and the sense of dignity. And just to answer to the people that have more reservations about data. So for instance, I live in Sweden, actually literally between Sweden and Denmark for 6 years of my life, 5 years and a half. And one of the things that I had in Sweden, a personal number that was my number that I had access to all my taxes, healthcare, and everything else. I had both in Sweden one and one in Denmark. And this has allowed me to have an entire understanding. So I was paying taxes, but I understood that I would have as well an entire strategy, and I know that the money was used because my child had a good education and they have all the different things. So I think if we are smart in the way we use this, I think smart cities is not different from a lot of things that the Nordics are doing, especially Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, but just put it in a global scale. And I think this comes, I think the challenge is that at the moment we have a very divided society where we have very extreme right levels or extreme left. We need to make a bit more of balance. That in the end of the day, we are all together on this, but we cannot be extremists. If you get extremists, we get the challenge that they've been taking us to the most disruption moments of history of mankind. So I'm actually quite bold, but quite apprehensive, and sometimes I'm a bit depressed with what I saw what I see on the news and what I see in social media. But at the same time, the point is what I tell everyone, the responsibility is ours. We let things happen or we don't let things happen. I am more in the sense that smart cities is where everything is happening right now, both innovation, technology, AI, blockchain, everything. And for instance, I mentioned Minas Gerais, that is creating a sense that all the taxi drivers of Minas Gerais are using a token where they can actually make payments and receive money for that. I think there's so much great things happening. And sometimes we don't speak about that. We just think about the drama and the bad things that happen. So bad things, we always had it, unfortunately, in history of mankind. It's more how we take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess it's partly the lizard brain just being drawn to the fight or flight aspects, rather than at the same time, you know, life expectancy is going up in general. Lots of great I saw today Ireland had created its most amount of renewable energy out of the total amount created yesterday, 66%. So there is a lot of good things happening as well. I want to talk about David Bowie, because David Bowie was an interesting futurist, and a bit like Peter Gabriel as well. They were very eager to look at ways to do things differently and to challenge the way that things were done. So in our interview with you back in 2016, you mentioned that you had worked with him. So I'm saying, what was it that you did with him, and what's your sense of him in terms of his kind of enthusiasm for futurist related stuff?
Yeah, it's a great example. Actually, I was using David Bowie because David Bowie was the first one to put his music in exchange. So he was trading music, his rights were traded. And this was much before even when the internet was starting. So I was privileged to work with David Bowie. So I actually published a record where David Bowie, with my small music label that I had when actually in my first organization. I work with him. Actually, I work more with the lawyer than with him directly, but I work with especially with the Visconti, Tony Visconti, which actually was one of the best friends of David Bowie. With him, actually, I met him, and actually, I had a fantastic interaction. And with David Bowie, of course, he participated in the record, and he was actually very generous because he participated for free. And mostly, what we discussed was that if the record would reach a huge success, he would get some royalty. But that shows as well the generosity of David Bowie. But I think the example of him and Tony Visconti as well, there was the producer of that record. And of course, he's a legendary music producer, probably one of the top producers of the 20th century. And I think I think David Bowie, I'm a huge fan of him, both from the creative side, from the capacity of adaptation and keep pushing forward. And I think he is a great example, definitely, for that sense of innovation, but as well a sense of looking at the trends and learning with the trends. Because a lot of people, I think the challenge that we have with our education systems and society is that people on their 20s, they think they learn everything. And then they think that and in university they get some ideas and they think, okay, I know everything now, I'll stagnate and I'll just complain about what happened. And I think the point right now is that the country that will survive and the organization that will survive is the ones that continue keeping update and keeping the trends. And I think David Bowie is a great example of that, that was always looking at from drum and bass to rock to pop to all the different areas that he had. He was actually the chameleon through his career. He also look at the trends and he adapt to that, even to technology. For instance, if you look at putting his music portfolio on the stock exchange when this was not even concerned, at the time it was something like, wow. But now it's completely reasonable. Now you have blockchain. Any artist, for instance, that is a musician should be right now putting their records digital and doing ICOs or security tokens and trying to create an audience with their users. Or if you have like millions or hundreds of thousands of followers, just work with his followers. And I think that's what David Bowie example was very wonderful for us, because he showed me all, at least for me as a fan, that while working with him was fantastic. I still keep the contract that we did with him. And I think the point right now is more in the sense of, I think as children of a more disrupted world, I think the next 10 years are going to be more disruptive than all the history of humanity, all by far. And the point is that they're going to be disrupted because our brain and our evolutionary mechanism as humans has been changing during the course of thousands of years. But now we are bioengineering ourselves. We are creating using a lot of digital tools that we interact with them on a daily basis. We are creating digital twins for all of us. For instance, you, Simon, me, we have a digital twin with our social media. We have a digital twin with our digital records. And so I think it's how we make this bridge together. And I think that's what I love about personalities like David Bauer, that they always went a leapfrog forward in terms of not being on their comfort zone, and as well trying to push themselves forward. Until he died, he was always on the cutting edge of both creativity and as well innovation as well, because he was as well one of the first people in the internet and a lot of other things, even his videos and so forth. So I think it's this kind of thing that is very difficult right now to look at this, because at the moment, for it's just an example that for the people listening to us is, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, for instance, the French army launched a regulatory public information about creating bionic soldiers. Okay, this is public. Okay, and Eric Schmidt, that is part of the Pentagon group of research, launched a paper with the US Army talking precisely about using AI for making decisions in war. So most of this news don't come to the top. What comes to the top is the problems with the unfortunately the negative stuff. So, but this can be seen, okay, are we looking at this, or are we letting all these people take these decisions for us? So I'm part of the people that I want to take these decisions in parallel with all these people. And to be honest, Chris, I've been involved with a lot of people that have from universities. And Chris, I interviewed, for instance, Dr. Ryan recently, which is a fantastic thought leader, Dr. Ryan Abbott, that is one of the leading personalities in AI and law and robotics. And for instance, one of the things he says is that, for instance, at the moment, the way the law is created is that a robot cannot create a patent. So as you can imagine, this actually is creating a huge amount of issues, but a huge amount of opportunities as well. So I think if I look at my children, and for instance, I remember that when I started using technology, I could not do almost anything because I was not a very software developing person. I was more a creative person. But now I can do films, I can do everything just with AI tools or with social media. So anyone can do fantastic things. And I think coming back to David Bowie, if David Bowie would be probably a child now, probably would be using social media to promote themselves and creating. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do. But I think trying to do this with a hat of creative person and a hat of thought leader and a hat of technology, because the technology is the tools of our time.
Yeah, and I guess the great thing about people like Bowie and others is that it gives you a roadmap of what can be done, what you don't have to settle for, and things to do. And as you mentioned, with your YouTube channel, you have a lot of interesting people that you've interviewed, which then helps to diffuse and share the ideas as well. So I think it's a very valuable process that you're going through, and it helps other people to understand too. So look, it's very great. It's great to talk to you. It's really interesting. How can people learn more about you and your work and what you're up to?
Yeah, so I think I'm all over social media. So like you mentioned, I have my Dinishwar the Twitter. I'm very present on YouTube. I have over 200 videos, and I'm actually producing videos on a daily basis. Videos, like you mentioned, and interviews is a way for me to learn and a way for me to keep updating myself. So I think, for instance, a good example is, let's say, I always tell this to my, I've been teaching universities, as I mentioned, I always tell to my students, okay, I got angry with all my students, and to be honest, I taught, but in 10 years, I only found two or three students that were more digital savvy than me. And that gets me very nervous, because at the moment, especially the young people listening to us, they have to be digital savvy. But the point is that every person listening to us, if I ask everyone how much time they spend on digital, probably everyone speaks that will spend between 5 to 10 hours. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think my point is, okay, you need to make sure, okay, that people have to follow up and really take this serious. So, and that's what I'm trying to do with my tools, is obliging myself to keep update, because in the end of the day, I think there's a phrase from the founder of Intel that is, only the paranoid survive. I don't want to be so drastic, but in the end of the day, it's, we need to keep update. And I think the younger the people listening to us, the more important that is. So I think my tools is intelligent. So definitely in the case of YouTube channel, Dinishwar, just search for my name, it's all over. than Twitter. I'm as well very present on Instagram. And you mentioned the creative side. So I draw and I paint. So my Instagram account is as well a profile that I've been using for more creative style and more creative research. But and I have a quite good follow base on Instagram. But it's difficult to get this. And it's keeping this, keeping the learning, and keeping this. So I think it's this kind of things that I'm trying to do. So people can find me on this and, of course, my books. I normally, for instance, the people subscribing for the Open Business Council get my book for free. So I'm trying to make sure that most of this is available for anyone in the world, and especially for people, students and everything else. I'm always available to help and engage as well.
Perfect. Look, thanks very much for coming on the podcast, and it's been very interesting to catch up with you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Simon. You know that I'm a huge fan of your work, and anything that you need and for your audience, wish all the best. And I think very important thing as a last note, I really am paranoid in the sense that people take care of their digital presence and they take care of this, because if they don't do it, they will have definitely a problem. And I think this is, for me, the biggest challenge we have right now, because people are not taking this serious. And the point is that people taking this serious are taking over everything. I think right now is okay, or we take for this, or they will take for us. Okay, so that's kind of the way I'm right now taking this in the next direction. Yeah,
great. Yeah, and it is a good thing to watch out for. So, very much. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Simon. I appreciate.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. You can sign up for more via our email digest, which does a weekly summary of all our podcasts, or you can follow us on your preferred podcasting platform of choice, or follow us on Twitter, Irish_Tech News, or Facebook, or LinkedIn, or the website irishtechnews.ie. We will bring you more soon, and thanks for listening.